Пуст, они подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
It's time to go to school with me today. It's another Sarah Goes to School episode. I'm really excited for this one. This should be a fun episode because we aren't talking about hard conversations
yes.
or having to deal with people you don't like.
Mm. Yes.
or any of those things. I mean, it is still, we're going to talk about decision making today. So still like
perfect.
A big topic.
Okay.
But I think this one is going to be really, really fun. So just a refresher. These are the episodes where y'all get to come to school with me in my organizational leadership classes at Concordia Irvine. I am in my 6th of 11 classes. So I am halfway through. I put graduation date on my calendar. Ooh, like this is getting real. By this time next year, I will, Lord willing, have a master's degree. So
awesome.
It's like a real thing now, which is super duper fun. So this class that I'm, the class that I'm currently in, hopefully I'll cover in the next episode because we're talking about effective execution of goals, which sounds like really businessy and drab. But let me tell you, the class is explaining this in a way that actually makes sense to my wonder and discernment working genius brain in a way that like I could actually get stuff done in an appropriate way. So that
sounds wonderful. I feel like I'm already looking forward to the next episode because I need this in my life, Sarah.
Yeah, I considered doing that for this episode, but I was like, Sarah, you're literally 2 weeks into this class. You don't know enough yet. So hopefully that's my plan for the next one. No guarantees because I may come across something even more interesting for the next time. But that's the plan for next episode. But this episode is from my last class, which was Ethical Decision-Making and Cultural Foundations. And it was just as jam-packed as that title makes it sound. It was all about ethics and decision-making and cultural stuff. And shout out to my professor, Jonathan Kidwell. He's a great professor. And it was a really interesting class, like making us think about these big ethical topics and how we would make decisions when there isn't really a right answer regardless. Any way you look at it, there could be different ways to do things. And it was really interesting. I kind of wish it was like two or three different classes because there was just so much there. And I enjoy that gray area space where we just kind of sit around and talk about really heavy topics, even though we may not all agree on stuff. So that was really fun. So this episode comes out of that class. One of the books that we had to read was Decisive: How to Make Better Choices in Life and Work by Chip Heath and Dan Heath. So if you've read Switch or Made to Stick, these are the same authors for those books. I've had Switch on my shelf for years and I haven't read it yet. So I need to read that one. But this was a really good book. Highly
Seems
recommend.
Like that's almost the opposite of Decisive. Switch.
Yeah. Switch is about making change and Decisive is about actually making decisions.
Okay.
In a way that doesn't overwhelm you. And you get out of the like pro and con list rut because so it's really interesting. They tell a story at the beginning and kind of through the book about how pro and con lists are like how everyone makes decisions, but they're actually like intrinsically flawed because we tend to just put stuff on the lists that only comes out of our own brains and doesn't actually widen our perspective outside of what we know.
Okay.
So their premise is that there's actually a better way to do it. And it takes this entire book to go through the whole thing. And it's not really short, but it did read really fast.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed it. 5 stars, kind of blew my mind a little bit. I've been using some of the concepts in some of the big decisions I've been making lately at work, especially. So
wait. Does this mean we can't use a pro and con list? Because I love my pro and con list. Or does it just mean we have to go beyond it?
You have to go beyond it.
Okay. So I can still start with my list.
You could probably start with your list.
I really love lists.
Oh, there are many ways to use lists in all of the things that he gives you in this book.
Yeah, you don't have to give up the list.
All right.
That is true. Yes. Yes. And I am not going through every single point in this book. There's a lot of stuff that
we can buy the book if we want that.
Yes. Because it's jam packed.
Critical Sarah.
Yeah.
Take.
Yes. Yes. So
boil it down.
I'm going to boil it. And we're going to use a fun story today.
Save me the time and money.
Jam and sweets.
That's right.
As you'll see in a hot second.
Oh! Okay. Yes.
So I really enjoy the premise of this book. So the authors, Heath and Heath, they lay out these four villains of decision making and then this process to overcome them. And so we're going to go through that process with a story about Miss Violet and the fellowship board at Miss Violet's church. And I made it up, but it is based on real life experiences. So I told you the story I was telling, and he's like, oh, because that actually happened to us. I'm like, yeah, well, using what I know. So the four villains that the Heaths talk about are narrow framing. So we define our choices too narrowly and employ this binary, like, should I or should I not line of thinking. And rather, we need to use like an and rather than or kind of thinking. So narrow framing is like we focus in on the spotlight of basically we only know what we know and we decide only on that. So like this is the pro and con list. Like, yes, you're making pros and cons, but you're only making pros and cons out of what you actually know. So getting out of that, which we'll get to in a second, getting out of that can help you make a better decision. The second one is confirmation bias. So we, as humans, naturally tend to seek out information that confirms our beliefs. It just makes a lot of things easier when we search for information. Like, well, I like this information and I'm going to ignore the stuff that doesn't actually agree with me because it's easier to do that. The third one, short-term emotion. I feel this one deeply because I feel emotions very heavily in my life. So when we have big decisions, we also tend to have a lot of big emotions about it immediately. So when we have to make this decision and you feel like that pit in your stomach of like, I don't know what to do, or like, this is going to be super hard, or I have a lot of anxiety about this. How do we get around that with outside perspective? And then the fourth one is overconfidence. So it's really easy for us as humans to think that we know a lot more about how things are going to turn out than we actually do, because we don't actually know the future. And while we can't get around that by like knowing the future, because that's impossible, there are ways to kind of future-proof our decisions or think about potentially what could happen in the future as we make decisions. So those are your four villains. And when we have choices that we make, typically we follow this pattern of analyzing options, making a choice, living with the consequences. That's kind of how it works. And sometimes that turns out just fine. Sometimes it doesn't. So if we match this outline with the villains, like we think too narrowly about our options, and then that makes us miss some options that we may not even think about. So like we say, should I or should I not buy this car, rather than is this car better than a van? Which car suits my needs best? Do I even need a car? Or is there a different form of transportation that would serve me better? So by broadening, using quote and not or thinking, gets us outside of that like should I or should I not decision making. We might analyze this but fall into this confirmation bias to only find information we agree on, because disagreement and dissent can honestly be scary. And then you have extra options and you have to figure out how to deal with all this other stuff. And it gets really confusing and whirlwindy really fast. And then emotion makes us want to make the decision that feels best in the moment, but may not be the best in the long term. And we kind of lose that perspective of what might be the best down the road that might be actually scary to make in the moment, but is going to be better in the long run. And we may guarantee an outcome that we really have no idea if it'll happen or have no control over, because we just don't have control over the future. So what do we do with all of this? Because I don't know. The Heaths have this really nice, this book is full of acronyms. They have this really nice, this was the acronym class. Everything we did had an acronym all over the place. So this one is WRAP, W-R-A-P, for their villain defeating strategy. That's what I call it. That isn't what they call it, but I think it's way more fun to talk about defeating the villains. Widen your options is W. R, reality test your assumptions. A, attain distance before deciding. And P, prepare to be wrong. So each of these villain defeating antidotes has a lot of different options or strategies. And some of these work depending on what kind of decision you're making. If it's like a financial thing in a business, or if it's trying to decide what car, or if you should buy a car, or if you're deciding what major you should take in college, or different kinds of decisions are going to kind of lead you into different paths, which is why I'm not going to tell you every single option that they have, because I'm not going through every single possible decision-making scenario in this episode. That would be super boring. So,
okay. And as we go,
yeah,
I'm going to ask you to help me, because I know you and I both tend to enjoy a little bit of low-grade anxiety.
Low-grade? I agree.
Low to medium to grade anxiety. How can you avoid decision paralysis as you do this? Because as soon as you start talking about widening choices and you know, things like this, giving up my pros and cons list, all of a sudden my blood pressure starts going up.
Yeah.
Because maybe I don't need to have 10,000 different choices. I'm aware that there are 10,000 different choices. Maybe I need to narrow that frame in order to have the courage to make it simple yes or no decision.
Yeah.
So help me as we go through this, help me understand how all of this is going to make me more relaxed and at peace with my decisions rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Hmm. I think part of this, well, first of all, widening options doesn't necessarily mean you have 50 options, but it may mean that you have 3 or 4 instead of 2. So
or
instead
it could
of
mean
using,
50 options.
It could mean, but the rest of the process may help you narrow that down too. Okay. And I think some of this is in the process of using all of these strategies, you're actually, it's you're not narrowing the focus, but you're kind of honing your decisions into a bucket that's going to be easier to decide, if that makes sense. So in widening your focus, you're taking in more information in a way that makes it easier to see the option that's actually going to be best, instead of just trying to decide in a binary, this or that, yes or no, will it work or will it not? When you bring in other information from different perspectives, it's easier to see how you should go. Does that make sense?
Okay. Sure. I'll get it as we go.
Yeah. I think it'll be one. Let's carry on. I think it might become more clear.
Okay. Hopefully this makes sense by the end. Maybe I'll just need to read the book. Maybe I'm not going to explain it, but I'm going to tell a story. So hopefully this helps.
I love stories.
Uh-huh. I made this up in the last few days. We'll see what happens. So lovely Miss Violet has, you can tell it's spring and there's flowers. All the names in this are flowers. Miss Violet has to make a decision. She is the head of the fellowship board at her church, which means she's in charge of all of the food during fellowship time. Mm. And lately, the donut holes during Bible study have gotten very stale and undesirable. The quality from the bakery has gone downhill.
Wow.
And people are complaining. Ugh. They do not
use Cruda Bakery.
Grateful. Ungrateful. These donut holes are probably a donation.
Oh, no. We pay for that. We, Miss Violet's church pays for them.
This is fiction, right? any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
Correct.
Correct. Right. All right. Good.
Miss Violet is a fictional character.
Okay. Donut holes. People are rebelling. They're grumbling.
They are stale and undesirable.
The donut holes were fresh and tender. I remember those days we sat around those donut bags. The coffee was so free-flowing, and now, if only we had been there, we could have died happy. Okay, tell us more about Miss Violet.
Okay, so nobody wants stale donuts. Correct. So Miss Violet has been tasked to, quote, deal with the situation.
Yes.
Because the current donut vendor's quality has gotten untenable. So this is a big decision, because we all know that food choices in churches actually are really important choices. Mm-hmm. So this is a little overwhelming for Miss Violet, and she is faced with a decision. What should she do about this donut vendor? So she's facing all of these villains.
Mm.
The first villain, narrow thinking. If she has her spotlight on the problem, she may only be considering options that she knows. Maybe the binary decision making of, should I keep the vendor or find a new one? Or I'll just replace the donut vendor with another donut vendor. But that's actually kind of narrow thinking. Maybe replacing with another donut vendor one for one isn't the best option here. Mm-hmm. So, number one, widening your options. How can Miss Violet expand her set of choices to actually make the decision the best decision, rather than just a decision that she thinks of immediately? Is there a better way to serve snacks? What else could she do to provide treats? Are donuts even the best option? Or is there a snack that people like even better, but it must be pretty great to beat donut holes, because donut holes are pretty great.
Maybe they just don't serve snacks at all. That is an option. And that would make them very happy with the donut holes pretty quick there. Mm,
that's true.
But take your donut holes away, then you'll be happy. Yeah. That is an option, though, isn't it?
We've widened our option.
Huh?
I'd love to be at that meeting. One option here, when we widen our options, I'm saying option a lot, sorry guys, is the, I'm going to say it again.
One possibility when we widen our options.
I need a thesaurus in my head right now.
Mm.
We are literally considering many different options. So including the word option many times is appropriate. It sort of artistically reinforces your point.
That's true. That's true.
I love you guys. The vanishing options test.
Mm.
So this means, what would you do if you couldn't choose any of the options you're considering? So if Miss Violet could not continue with the current vendor or keep getting donuts for anybody, what could she do? That's an interesting thing to think about. Another way to widen options is to multi-track. I like this one, and this because my brain just works in a million different spaces all at once. So multi-track means to run multiple decisions at the same time and then see where you end up at the end of that. So Miss Violet doesn't have to do this all on her own. She is the head of the fellowship board, but that means she has people. Mm. So she could task two or three different people with two or three different options and have them run through those options and see what the cost would be, if there is a viable option for getting the number of treats that she needs, what all of those different potential things could be, and then have them report back to her and see what those multiple options would look like at the end. And this helps get her an and not or scenario. Maybe this is going to come up with another option that she hadn't even thought of, because another vendor is going to tell her some like wild cupcake idea that she didn't even think about.
Hmm.
Or she can end up combining different things. This helps her get out of that, we're just going to replace this donut vendor with a different donut vendor kind of thinking.
Or by asking several people to get really invested in this decision, she then has an opportunity to practice, what is that? Hard conversations and interpersonal conflict management.
Yes, another skill we've learned. And while she's doing this, while she's talking with people, this isn't really like a strategy, but this is something to keep in mind, what they call prevention and promotion mindsets. So the prevention mindset is about avoiding a bad outcome, and a promotion mindset is about getting a positive outcome. And combining those two together is where you get your best stuff. So like, yes, Miss Violet wants to avoid bad donuts and unhappy people. Like that is a way to solve this, is just by avoiding a bad outcome. By going after a good outcome, she wants to have the best snack possible and the most happy people, which may be very idealistic, right? So finding the happy medium of avoiding the bad stuff, but also getting the good stuff, is kind of where we want to sit. And some of this is very like personality based. If you're just naturally a more like, I'm going to avoid the bad stuff person, it can be hard to look for the really good options. Or if you're a very optimistic person, you're like, I'm just going to go for the best option, you may fall into not actually avoiding the bad option. So living somewhere in the middle of all of this is a good place. My favorite option for widening focus is to find someone who solved your problem. I am really bad at asking someone their opinions about how to solve something before I even research it myself. And then I go research it and realize that I could have maybe answered my question on my own. But this is because I love to search out other people's expertise. So find someone else who solved your problem and see how they solved it. Maybe they have an idea that you hadn't thought of before. There's likely someone out there who has solved your problem in a way that is going to widen your perspective on what you could do about it. And this is why I really love certain parts of Reddit. There's some really bad parts of Reddit, but there's also some really interesting parts of Reddit where, like, we've solved some weird technical problems at home because somebody else already did the work and figured it out. So, like, don't go to the weird spaces. But there's some really good parts of Reddit and even like public groups on Facebook in our age of technology. It's a lot easier to find people who have already solved the problems that you're dealing with. And this happens all the time in our Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group. Like, how many questions do you approve, Erin, that are like, I have this problem and I don't really know what to do. And like, you get 200 comments of people who have already thought through an issue from a variety of different perspectives.
And that's how we learn to get candle wax out of fair linen.
Exactly.
That's right.
And that is a very simple example of widening your focus, of figuring out from other people how to make a decision or solve a problem from a perspective that you just didn't know about. Changing the donut vendor to a new vendor is the easy option for Miss Violet. But is there a better option that somebody else has found? And if Miss Violet were a member of the Facebook group, she could just ask and get like 100 different opinions on how this has been solved in other churches. So once Miss Violet has widened her options, she has widened her focus through thinking through what would happen if she couldn't get donuts anymore, talking to other people, multi-tracking a few options. Now she's got to reality test her assumptions that are... As she's exploring these options, it would be really easy for her to think, not maliciously at all, just because of our own mindsets and our own worldviews and whatever, that obviously people want to keep donuts. Like, it's her favorite. She thinks it's everybody else's favorite, too.
So we've always had donuts.
We've always had donuts. Why would we do anything differently? Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So she may ask questions from other people that really only give her that confirmation. Like, what's your favorite donut? You really love the donuts, right? Only really asking questions that are going to give her answers that align with how she's already thinking. So how can she move out of this confirmation bias to find better information? And one way to do this is to consider the opposite, which is a kind of scary place to live, but it helps you maybe see your decision from an opposite point of view. So in Miss Violet's case, maybe people actually prefer savory treats to sweet ones, which is wild. But like, what if that's true? She's not going to know unless she
possible
asks that question. It's possible. Or maybe they just want coffee before church and actually want to start having a full fellowship meal after. So considering the opposite of our decision helps us find answers that we might not consider because we only see the information we're looking for rather than looking outside of that space.
Okay. It could be that many more people than she anticipated are struggling with diabetes and gluten intolerance.
Maybe we need something grain-free that isn't a donut or a cookie or a muffin, and maybe it needs to be like Jell-O because that's super Lutheran.
Jell-O for coffee hour?
Can you imagine?
Bold choice. Would you like some more coffee with that Jell-O jiggler there, friend?
Oh, coffee Jell-O. You could just do coffee Jell-O.
Thinking outside the box.
Widening our options.
Widening our options. Another way to do this is to ask disconforming questions. So this is when people who really love to play devil's advocate get to play devil's advocate. And so Miss Violet loves these people, right? Especially when she's having her meetings and people are like, why do you want to do this? So you could ask questions like, do we actually need snacks? The kids just eat them all anyway. Why do we have donuts instead of coffee cake or Jell-O? Why are we using that certain bakery when others have higher ratings?
These sound like wonder people.
Yeah. I feel like devil's advocate people maybe wonder people a lot.
I feel like I literally asked a couple of those questions like 5 minutes ago as soon as I met Violet.
You did? Beautiful. Uh-huh. Beautiful. See, you're already working the system. You don't even know it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Miss Violet can also consider the inside and outside views. So the inside view is our own evaluation. The outside view is how the situation generally unfolds. Those are pretty easy to understand terms. Mm. So Miss Violet can consider how she sees her decision playing out. She can also take the viewpoint of another person in the congregation, maybe a mom of small children, and see the situation from that person's point of view. So from that point of view, from the mom's point of view, she maybe realized that donuts are actually really messy for moms to deal with. And they get really sticky hands and sticky faces, and the moms have to deal with all of the sticky everywhere, and the icing gets all over the place, and the crumbs get everywhere, and the moms actually hate the donuts because they're super messy, and they would actually prefer a different snack, which is not a perspective that Miss Violet had, but she can learn that from considering a perspective from somebody else, and that mom would actually prefer smaller, less sticky snacks for the treat. And
I love that Miss Violet here is really trying to like love the congregation through this decision. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't once heard her say out loud, but I really like donuts and I want donut.
Mm-hmm. We'll
She's
get to that.
Really empathetic here. And I just adore that about her.
Dealing with that emotion, that'll come up.
Oh, okay. I spoke too soon.
But you're right. She's trying really hard to make the best decision. Mm. So the last option that I'm going to tell you about reality testing assumptions is probably my favorite because I'm an engineer's daughter and I grew up in an engineering family and we love to run experiments. And so in the book, they call this ooching. And I don't exactly remember where it came from, but the word is just really fun. Mm. So ooch, O-O-C-H, ooch.
Okay.
So to ooch the decision is to take the big decision and shrink it down to like a tiny experiment. So you're going to just test your option and see what actually happens. So she could run some small experiments, maybe like a snack bracket to see what people actually like. Because we all know when you ask people's opinions about something and they tell you what they like, and then you do the thing that they told you that they like.
People don't know.
People don't know.
That's true.
They might tell you they want cookies. And then when you put the cookies out, they may be like, why do we have cookies? I don't want cookies. So to get around people telling her things that may or may not actually, not that they're lying to her, but like, you know, sometimes you think you like something until it happens and you're like, actually, I didn't want this. So she could ooch that decision by every couple of weeks having a different snack and taking notes for what actually goes the best and what people say about the snack that's on the table and whether or not the kids actually eat it and whether the moms appreciate it and how messy the floor is when everybody is done. And she could take all of that into stock and see what actually happens.
Okay. Sounds like maximum science. And I think we're a fan of that on this show.
We are totally a fan of maximum science. This is absolutely maximum science. I like that. And I mean, let's be honest, Miss Violet is taking this decision very seriously. And I don't know if any fellowship board would really go through all this trouble, but I love that Miss Violet is going through all this trouble to find the best possible snack. Okay, so Miss Violet has reality tested her assumptions. She's run a bunch of these little experiments. She's talked to some people. She's gotten outside opinions. Now we're to the A, attain distance before deciding. She has done all of this stuff.
Wait, are you supposed to be doing these in order?
Yes.
Oh.
Sorry, I don't think I said that, did I? This is meant to be run in order.
It's a sequence.
It is a sequence.
Okay, yep. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going.
And I mean, the R and the A may, I mean, you might be like going in a cycle for some of this, but yes, running this in order is going to be your best
shot. Got it.
So attaining distance before deciding. This is where Violet starts to have a lot of big emotion because she's starting to realize that donuts aren't the best option for this congregation. They actually want something completely different, but she doesn't really want to have to find a new vendor because that's stressful. And she actually really likes donuts and doesn't really want to stop having donuts. Mm-hmm. And a little tidbit I didn't tell you yet. Her niece runs the current shop, and there's a lot of emotion about taking business.
Oh, snap.
Yes.
So what is she going to do? She's having a lot of big emotions, but the congregation obviously wants to have a better option and a different option. So how does she manage this? And a helpful framework to get some distance from the emotions of the decision is this 10-10-10 framework. So this is how you feel about this decision, or how deeply it'll affect you, or how much anxiety you're going to have about it in 10 minutes, 10 months, and 10 years. Mm-hmm. So is this something that is a long-term decision that you're going to feel really strongly about in 10 years, and it's a very big decision? Is this something that in 10 minutes you might feel super anxious about, but in 10 months it's just going to be whatever. It's going to be in the past, no big deal. Mm-hmm. Or is this something that can be changed down the road? So if Miss Violet is dealing with her big emotion, but considering changing the donuts to these cute little mini cookies from this really highly rated bakery that like her town is famous for and she didn't know about until she started asking questions, she can consider that decision with this 10-10-10 framework. Mm. So as she thinks about this, in 10 minutes, she's still going to be pretty emotional about it. Like, this is a big change for her. It's pretty stressful for her, right? She has to deal with all of this stuff. But in 10 months, when the congregation has switched, she's probably going to feel pretty good about it. If this is what the congregation wanted and people are happy, there's a good chance that her anxiety and her big emotions will be processed and everything will be fine. And in 10 years, she won't be the board president anymore. Someone else can deal with the changes, and who knows, they may have chosen something else to do at that point. So this gives her some perspective to know that, yes, it's a big decision. She's having big emotions about it. It may be hard to get through that first initial switch, but there's a good chance that months down the road, it's going to be just fine. And that gives her some perspective to process through the hard part of it and know that she will probably be okay. That everybody is going to be okay in 10 months and especially in 10 years when like no one's even going to remember that this happened. Except maybe the kids who had a lot of fun with all the snacks. Something else to consider here is that we really like what we're familiar and we like to avoid being hurt. So like loss aversion is a real thing. So those things add up to this status quo bias where we'd rather just keep things the same. And that's part of what Miss Violet is dealing with. Like, it's hard to change stuff. It's hard to make these big decisions. It's way easier to just leave stuff the same. Mm-hmm. But if that's not the best outcome, she has to make this decision that involves change and process her way through it. And one of maybe the best things that Miss Violet could do, and this is another one of my favorite ways to make decisions, maybe a little bit too much because I just really like other people's opinions, is consider what she would tell a friend if her friend, Miss Peony, was asking her advice for the exact same situation. So imagining that Miss Peony is in her place and she's asking Miss Violet for her own opinion on what Miss Peony would do. And a lot of times that is such a good way to get outside of your own brain and think about what you would tell somebody else to do in a situation. Because we like giving our friends good advice. Mm-hmm. We like being wise for our friends and being that counsel and wisdom for other people when they're making a decision. And our friends a lot of times have the outside perspective that we need, especially when we're feeling a lot of big emotion about stuff and it's hard for us to separate from our big emotions about things. Our friends are able to give us that perspective of what actually would be the best thing to do. And Miss Violet realizes that she would tell Miss Peony to get the little mini cute cookie snacks that the church loves because the moms love them. They're a lot less expensive than the donuts, which is the budget people love that part. They're a lot less messy. They're going to be a lot easier to manage. They're going to be easier to use for leftovers because they won't go stale as quickly. And it turns out that the owner is interested in what Lutheranism means. So there's like this whole outreach evangelism opportunity there too. So like Miss Violet's like, well, of course, that this is what I would tell Miss Peony to do because that's the obvious choice. There's so many benefits to this.
Mm. That's it's so funny. Opinion. It's so much easier to make decisions for other people than for yourself.
It's
true. So I actually really like this distancing technique because that takes some of the pressure off. Like I could easily tell you what you ought to do. I can see your situation clearly, it's just mine is all muddy and
right, yeah,
unclear.
And, yeah, It's easy for us to make things far more complicated for ourselves than they actually need to be. Because we know all the stuff going on in our heads. Yeah. And sometimes you need a good friend to be like, dude, like, chill and just make this decision. It's going to be fine. And so finally, this last part of attaining distance before deciding is analyzing a decision based on core priorities. And we talked about this a little bit when we talked about personal mission, vision, and value statements. And so we can see when we make decisions for ourselves, like with an organization, of course, you're going to try to align stuff the best that you can with an organization's mission and vision. But that works for you personally, too. And we talked about this a little bit. So you think about what decision is going to best align with those things that you've already decided for yourself. So for Miss Violet, she can ask, what is the priority of the fellowship board? Well, the fellowship board is there to serve people. And she should decide based on what's best for the congregation, not on what she personally wants, because that's not the point of the fellowship board. So she is making her decision with confidence. And one way to make a decision with even more confidence is the P, prepare to be wrong, because we all know that we make decisions and end up, sometimes they just don't work out. Sometimes they work out just fine and it's awesome. Sometimes they don't. And then we have to deal with it.
So is that,
I don't think I like this one.
Attitude, as in prepare to be wrong, like have the attitude of, well, I might not have made the right choice, or are there specific preparations that you're supposed to be doing, like have the alternative that you can fall back on? Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah. So these are strategies, A, to try to future-proof, or in engineering talk, fail-safe your decision, if there's ways that you can kind of shore it up to make sure that you're not missing those big things that may trip you up, and having fallback options just in case, or knowing when to pivot. So Miss Violet is so close to calling that vendor and dropping them and going to a new one. And it's going to be a big decision, but she's like feeling a little anxiety. Like, what if this doesn't work out? She's considered what she would advise Miss Peony. She's employed this and not or by finding a different way to give her niece's bakery business when she pulls the church's business to another vendor. So she's gotten through that big emotion and that, like, oh no, I'm going to pull this business from this bakery by finding another option through probably multi-tracking her options. But what if she's wrong? What if it doesn't go well? How can she know? She can't know, obviously, because she doesn't know the future. But there's a way to think through options to see if you've got a shot at this. So you've got a pre-mortem and a pre-parade. I love these. So pre-mortem is a little morbid, but I like it. So in a pre-mortem, you consider that in a year, your decision has failed. You have to run an autopsy on why and then what you could do to mitigate those circumstances. So thinking through, like, well, what if she makes this decision and nobody actually likes it? Why? What happened to that decision making? Well, maybe the kids actually didn't like them, even though they said they did, or the flavors changed and they didn't like them, or new people came to the congregation expecting donuts, or the price of the cookies skyrockets unexpectedly and they can't afford them anymore.
Or people got tired of them really quickly. Like, or they liked them the first Sunday, but then after a while, they're like, ah, cookies again?
Yeah. So thinking through reasons why people would not actually go along with the decision or not like the choice that she made, and then figuring out if she can mitigate any of that or what she's going to do if that happens so she can pivot quickly. If people get tired of them, maybe there's a different option or a different flavor or something that she can switch to so she can mitigate the bad things that might happen and has a plan for that in case those things happen. Obviously, some of those things are out of her control, but she could still have a plan of what to do if something like that happened. The pre-parade is the opposite of that. You consider that in a year, this decision was a raging success and you lead the parade for why and act on what you've discovered. So in her pre-parade, she might realize that the town that she lives in is famous for these mini cookies all along and she never knew. And by giving this bakery more business, they're able to expand and have even better cookies. Like, oh, that's awesome. But she might also realize that they go through less cleaning supplies because they don't have to clean sticky messes and vacuuming crumbs is a lot easier. So thinking about the good things, the reasons why this would be a success, and making sure that she's implementing those things into her decision. the part that I like the best about preparing to be wrong, because I really like plan Bs and I like knowing what I'm going to do if stuff happens, is the tripwire. And tripwires are just so useful, especially if you're like, if you know you're going to need to make a decision about something and you don't really want to make it yet, you can set a tripwire and then you can kind of, it's kind of kicking the can down the road a little bit in some circumstances. But a tripwire is, at what point do we pivot, or do we scrap the idea completely or fall back on a backup plan? And this is just really, really useful. So for Miss Violet, she could set this tripwire that in 3 months, if she's noticed that they still have a lot of leftover cookies or people aren't enjoying them, or there's actually a lot more crumbs than they expected to be, that at that point in 3 months, they will fall back on their backup plan to replace them with donut holes from a different vendor or something. Mm. They come up with a backup plan and they know that at that 3 month tripwire, if it's not working at that point, then they'll switch. And that way you don't have to have this constant anxiety about like, I don't know what to do and I don't know when I should, mm-hmm. if I should make a new decision. Like, you make your decision, you set your tripwire of this is the point that I'm going to reevaluate, and then you make your decision and go. And then when you get to that point, then you can decide like, oh yeah, this is actually working great. We're just going to keep going. I really, really like that, because then I can just take it out of my head and then it doesn't live there. So now Miss Violet has made her decision. She's going to do the cute little mini cookies. She's got her tripwire set. She implements them and everyone lives happily ever after. The kids love her and the fellowship board is this raging success. Hmm. The end.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, like, people just really want to know that this process for change, because like, change is hard for people. Making decisions to make change is really hard. But people really want to know that the process was fair, that like, you've thought through stuff, you've taken other people's opinion, if it's a decision with other people, mm-hmm. that you've taken other people's thoughts and opinions into this decision. And it's really helpful to just have a lot more input than what's in your head. So that is the wrap process for busting your four decision-making villains from mm-hmm. the Heaths.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. How Beautiful. Do you feel, Rachel?
Yeah, I'm going to say, with all due respect to Messrs. Heath and Heath, I'm not sure any of this is rocket science.
It's not.
It was a helpful reminder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I get out of it more than anything is slow down, use your friends, and use your imagination
mm-hmm.
to make solid decisions, with the understanding that there is no such thing as a perfect decision.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. There are just decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that pre-mortem and pre-parade yeah. imaginative exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would this look right? What would this look like if everything goes really right and this turns out to be an amazing decision?
Mm-hmm.
What would it look like if it then? And how can we prepare for both of those outcomes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I don't remember where, some webinar that I did years ago, but I still remember that one of the things they were saying is that every time you're changing something, you are exchanging one set of known problems that you want to get rid of for a different set that you think are somehow better problems, but there's still problems. Mm. There, you cannot eliminate right. problems.
Yes.
You're just picking a new set of problems, a somehow more desirable set of problems.
Yeah.
And so therefore, like, don't deceive yourself into thinking that somehow this change is actually going to be so ideal. Now, of course, you know, there's change and then there's, you know, capital C change, but a C change.
Ah.
But yeah, I think also having that perspective of going into it, like you were saying, with that's an element of being prepared to be wrong, like that there isn't necessarily an ideal solution because the Lord has not yet returned.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Until then, we can do our best. And
yes.
And it's always okay. possible that you can go through all the steps in a responsible decision-making process, get to the end, make a good decision, and turns out it's a bad decision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is giving yourself the freedom to admit that is really, really helpful.
Yes.
It's okay mm-hmm. if you make a bad decision
mm-hmm.
because the Lord will see you through. and you'll learn something from it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
I would like to have seen, I know that, you know, beyond the scope of this, but obviously as Christians, whenever we're making decisions, the word of God is going to inform those decisions. And all of those decisions really ought to be bathed in prayer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, goes without saying, but it still ought to be said.
Yes, this is correct. I wrote some of that stuff in the book as I was reading, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's an extra element to this as Christians that they obviously didn't put in the book. But yes.
Add a whole lot more P's to your list. Widen, pray, etc.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Like none of this is rocket science. And I think, honestly, I think that's one of the things that I just really loved about this book. And I feel like I wrote that in one of my papers. That, like, none of this is wild and crazy stuff. It's just it's a process for thinking through something that to a lot of us just feels really overwhelming when we have a big decision to make. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to just be paralyzed because you're like, I don't know what to do. And I don't even know how to get to the point where I know what to do. Right. So this is just, it's helpful to have all these different strategies to help you through that process so you can actually get to the end of it and make a decision that is actually hopefully a good decision or a bad one that you've learned from. But like getting to that point where you can be like, I have made this decision. Because that can be really hard to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they say in this book that like, this is for like big decisions. Like if you're trying to decide what shirt to wear in the morning, you probably don't need to go through this entire process. Like big decision, life-changing kind of stuff, things that affect other people, it's helpful to kind of, yes, take your time and go through it. Mm-hmm. I will also say there are a lot of, they put some really interesting and complex decision-making processes into the book. So if you do decide to get the book and read it, there are some other strategies that I didn't mention because it's just a lot, but some other scenarios where they walk through a lot of these other more complex situations and complex things that like somebody could have just made a decision very easily, or I shouldn't say easily, very quickly without knowing a lot. And the outcome would have been very different than had they actually gone through. And because they did go through this different process and make it a little bit more of a complex decision-making process, the outcome was vastly different and vastly different in a positive manner. So like a guy trying to decide whether or not to have this life-changing surgery, like he could have just decided like, should I or should I not have the surgery? And he chose to do it in a much more complex way and bringing in a lot of different outside perspectives. And he ended up with a really positive outcome that he may not have had had he just decided, should I or should I not? So there's a lot of other examples that I found very interesting. Miss Violence is a nice, cute little example that is very...
Yeah.
Are you saying that coffee hour treats is not a major life decision?
I mean, it does affect a lot of people. So it is a very important decision.
Mm.
Maybe not as important as whether or not you get life-saving surgery, but still a very important decision that many people will tell you they have an opinion on if you decide to change it without any input. Yes. So
that's true.
Well, that's all I have for you. Thanks for following along in my decision-making journey with Miss Violet and all of the things I learned in this book.
That's great.
In my class, this was a really fun part of this class. So I hope you all learned something as well. I will have another Sarah Goes to School episode at some point. I don't remember when the next one is, but maybe we'll do how to execute on your goals because it's way more fun than I thought it was going to be, which is super surprising. You can join our conversation on how to make decisions in our Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group, where we also give a lot of opinions to other people who ask for help with your own decisions. And also on our Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. Join us at both of those places. You can sign up for our e-newsletter at the show notes for this episode. And you can find all of our podcasts at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.